You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
Bleeding Green Nation, and welcome back to BGN Radio. I'm John Stolness, and we've got an Eagles preview show coming up here in just a couple of minutes, but BGN Radio back on your little digital telephones, and we are excited to be bringing you yet another year of Eagles football, an Eagles season in which we've never experienced this before, defending Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles, and I want to introduce the man, the myth, the legend, the brains behind the operation, the guy that you've been wanting to hear, Brandon Lee Galton from Bleeding Green Nation, the brains of the operation. BLG, it is so good to be doing this with you, man. How are you, buddy?
John Stolness, here I am. I am back on the airwaves, on the podcast waves, whatever you call it.
The podcast waves,
I am
indeed.
Finding myself at a loss for words because, look, I haven't done a podcast in a couple of months. This is uncharted territory for me. For the first time since, like, 2013, I've gone 2 months without talking about the Eagles into a microphone in my normal podcast space. So it's a very different thing for all of us here. Obviously there have been some big changes, but overall the most important thing out of all of this is that we are back and the Philadelphia Eagles are defending Super Bowl champions. And look, it's I'll address the elephant room right away. Like, obviously things are different. I'm not really able to get into all of that right now. I want to be able to address that to our loyal listeners and our loyal readers, and hopefully we get to that point. But for right now, we're kind of just focusing on the next step for what all of this is, and it is very new. So I ask you for your patience with us. I ask you to give us, you know, time to settle in here and for you to get adjusted to all this. It is all very new. We are all working hard, I can assure you, to, you know, make the best Eagles content and podcast we can, as we always do. And John, I am looking forward to working with you, my friend. For those who do not remember Mr. John Stolness, I mean, I don't know how you already don't know him, but he was doing a great job with our old friend Matt Daring on the BGN Radio preview shows back in 2016. Johnny did a great job with that. And not only that, I mean, I think the biggest thing and probably one of the most important things to remember here is that Mr. John Stolness did not give up on the Eagles when Carson Wentz went down. I mean, he was probably one of the most staunch people who still believed in this team. And he was writing that Nick Foles could be the next Jeff Hostetler, as Mr. John Stolness occasionally contributes to BleedingGreenNation.com. So you might know him as the Phillies guy, but he can certainly talk about the Eagles, too.
Well, I appreciate that, man. Yeah, and I'm psyched to do this because it was such a blast to do the preview shows with Matt a couple years ago. Matt was terrific to work with, and I got to work with you, and it was really fun to do that a couple years ago. I missed it last year. Of course, my leaving the podcast was probably the reason they went on that Super Bowl run, so I hope I'm not jinxing anything by coming back. Yeah. It's something to consider, man. I mean, I if I'm that guy, then I guess I'll be that guy. But no, it's, you know, and I've been a diehard Eagles fan since the mid '80s, since the first Buddy Ryan year. I mean, I remember the Scab season when Buddy's boys went 7-5 and the replacements kept them from getting into the playoffs. I remember the fake kneel down against Dallas. You know, I remember Randall's back scrambling. I remember the good and the bad and the really ugly of the Rich Kotite era, man. I mean, I lived through Ray Rhodes. I lived through 4th-and-1. I remember watching that game in my college dorm. I was at 58-37, the wild card game against the Lions in 95, man. I think I have what I like to call institutional knowledge of this team. You know, I can refer back to the early Andy Reid days. I can refer back to, you know, to the last season of Ray Rhodes, you know, that as being able to write for BleedingGreenNation.com a little bit last year was really good to flex those Eagles muscles. And, you know, I'm psyched to be talking about the defending Super Bowl champions. That you and I are going to be doing a preview show every week here where we take a look at that next week's game. And, you know, as far as the future of this podcast, Brandon, we've got some really exciting news. I mean, this is part of a whole new push that we're doing here with SB Nation and Philadelphia as a whole with podcasts.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome, John. I mean, we have a great group of people. We're working here. We still have the Kissed and Solak show that everyone loves on BGN Radio. I'm so glad we're able to keep that. Obviously, Michael Kissed, Benjamin Solak being extremely knowledgeable about football. I say too much. Yep. I think they know way too much about football sometimes, and they're talking over my head, and they make me look dumb, which is bad, and I probably have to end up firing them someday. But jokes aside, those guys are great. I'm so glad to have them here. And then who knows? I mean, this is a whole new thing for us. Like, this is the Bleeding Green Nation podcast feed. You're gonna have your BGN radio show with John Stolness and I. We could be interacting with Kissed and Solak as well. They're gonna have their show. Who knows what else? What other possibilities there are? There are a lot of possibilities here. So I am excited to kind of figure out how it all works out. And you know, I think we're off to a good start here.
Yeah, and in Bleeding Green Nation, obviously we have a feed here for podcasts, but also, you know, make sure you're checking out the other SB Nation Philly sites too. Liberty Ballers, the Sixers podcast, the Broad Street Hockey podcast that follows the Flyers, and the other podcast that I'm going to be a part of. You know, if anybody's listening knows about Hitting Season, knows about The Good Fight, you know, we have a Good Fight podcast as well. So that we're going to be launching with 12 shows total across all four Philadelphia sports platforms. And it's going to be really, really cool. I think that, you know, everybody's kind of rowing in the same direction. But like Brandon said, you know, just kind of bear with us for a little bit as we kind of get our feet. You know, if there's some stumbles along the way, we'll work through them quickly. But the main thing, Brandon, is we're going to be doing some Eagles talk here once again on BGN Radio. And I want to call you guys out there to make sure, no matter wherever you find us, subscribe, please, to this podcast, rate and review the show. Go to BleedingGreenNation.com. The show will be there as well. Look for the Bleeding Green Nation podcast feed where you'll find BGN Radio as well as the Kissed and Solak show. Make sure you're doing all that stuff as part of getting re-energized by BGN Radio and following this football team, who, by the way, Brandon, play their second preseason game on Thursday night. And I'm a little embarrassed because I had the opponent in front of me. Like, I know we played the Steelers last week, and I knew I had it, and I just flew right out of my head. I'm trying to remember who we're playing on Thursday night. A little help,
John. I can't believe you forgot the first episode. It is the team that I'm trying to think here. Oh, it's right. It's the team that the Eagles played earlier this year on February 4th when they beat them 41-33. When Nick Foles caught a touchdown pass in the end zone, when Tom Brady dropped a pass in the middle of the field, when Brandon Graham strip-sacked Tom Brady, which is probably one of the most defining and biggest moments of my life, when I just remember being there, and I've talked about this a ton, but I will never get tired of talking about it, where I was just in the stands, looking down on the field in Minnesota. I am shaking just the daylights out of the guy next to me because I just lost control of my body. It was an amazing experience. It is so fun to think that there is it's silly to think it's a Super Bowl rematch, quote unquote, because, like, come on, guys, it's a game in the middle of August. It just doesn't matter. But at the same time, it completely matters because we all get to think about how awesome it was for this team to win the Super Bowl. It's just another chance to kind of to live in that. And at the same time, I mean, it's the second preseason game. Like, we got to see some of these young guys, just like we saw against the Steelers. So another big opportunity here for some of these camp battles, some of these roster battles to be won and lost. There's definitely some interesting things going on in this game. So, you know, we all talk about the Super Bowl angle, but it's, you know, a pretty important game as far as preseason games can be important.
And I didn't, by the way, to the listening audience. I just did all my bona fides about how big an Eagles fan I am. I knew who we were playing this week. That was for the theatrics of the moment. No, but we training camp is now over. And you know, like you said, these games are going to start to matter in really for specific players. Really more, nobody cares about wins and losses. And really, the main goal with preseason football is that none of your stars get injured. We saw what happened to Darius Geis, the Redskins rookie running back who tore his ACL in the first preseason game. You'd love to just wrap everybody in bubble wrap, and I can't imagine there's a player out there who wouldn't want that too. So I mean, obviously that's the most important thing, and obviously the biggest question mark that we have heading into the season, and now that training camp is over, is how, you know, where are we with Carson Wentz? Because throughout training camp, he did not participate in any 11-on-11 drills. We're hearing that he's going to return to 11-on-11s in practice next week, BLG. How's he look to you when he's been out there doing 7-on-7 so far?
John, he has done a little bit of 11-on-11, but it's easy for you to forget this, though, because he only did it for the first couple of days here. He only did it for the first two or so days, and then as soon as there was one day where Elijah Qualls drove Chance Warmack back into, almost right into Carson Wentz's surgically repaired knee, although, and then Carson Wentz,
like, that's enough.
And oh my gosh, you could hear some of the people at camp like just audibly gasp, like, and
oh man, I can imagine.
And you know, it was fine. I mean, Carson got out of trouble, and it wasn't really that bad at all. I mean, there was no contact, so Carson got out of trouble's way, and that was great to see, honestly. I mean, because he's gonna eventually face those moments in the season, so it was nice to see him still be able to kind of move and get out of the way. And look, when Carson was practicing in 11-11, he looked awesome. He was great. He was like, he was throwing lasers all over the field. He had a one pass to Shelton Gibson about 30 yards down the field that was just on a rope. That was one of the highlight plays he had in that limited time. And then it kind of got weird, John, because the Eagles backed him off after he was doing that 11-on-11. There's speculation that, you know, is there some kind of swelling? Is there a setback? I don't know. I don't think I am of the belief that that was the case. I believe the Eagles, and maybe I'm being naive, and maybe the Super Bowl is kind of just my green, midnight green glasses on here, but I really think that when Doug Peterson is saying, look, Carson Wentz looked good, and we don't need to see him in 11-on-11 in an environment where he could unnecessarily get hurt, and we want to be careful, I think they're being honest, and I think they are being careful. And, you know, even hearing him, Carson Wentz now on WIP this week, say that it's going to be close, and somehow that being this new big revelation, I don't think that is news to me. I think it was always going to be close. Right. Like, how is it not going to be close? We always knew it was going to be close, and I am still of the belief, and I always have been, that he's going to play week one. That's stuff we were hearing back in January last year. We were hearing reports that it was possible for him to be ready. I think he's looked so good in terms of his mobility, watching him on these rollouts, on these bootlegs, even after practice, working on some of those drills. I continue to be of the belief that he's going to play week one, and I don't think it's rushing him. People always think, oh, if he plays in week one, it's automatically rushing him. Look, if the doctors clear him, if Carson Wentz feels he's ready, if the coaching staff feels he's ready, it's not a rush at that point. I know it might be earlier than people expect, and it's earlier than a timeline of a regular ACL might take, but that doesn't matter as much to me as what Carson Wentz's doctors say and his specific situation. So that's where I'm at with it still.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the question is his knee still healing, or is it, you know, if it's fine, then it's just basically a matter of delaying the risk, like you mentioned. You know, it's just a matter of, we don't want to run the risk of him getting hurt. I mean, you know, they'd take a lot of heat if Wentz got injured doing 11-on-11s when he didn't need to be doing 11-on-11s. And I don't know, as far as I'm concerned, I don't need to see him in a preseason game. I don't want him anywhere near a preseason. Maybe you want to get him a quarter in the fourth game or something, maybe. But for me, I'm fine just kind of letting Carson get back into 11-on-11s in practice and letting him stand on the sidelines for all these preseason games. And, you know, if he's ready, if that gets him ready for week one, then great. But, you know, I guess, you know, what odds do you give him to play in week one then? Do you think it's more likely than not that he's ready to go for the opener?
Yeah, I think it is. I really do. And I've consistently maintained that too. I'm unflappable in my belief that Carson Wentz will play in week one. And look, I mean, obviously him not being in 11 on 11s fully tells you that, okay, there's some kind of chance. We'll see here. But I just think he is going to be ready. And because when is he okay, so if he's not ready for week one, how much longer would it take after that? I mean, clearly the Eagles did not put him on the physically unable to perform list, the PUP list, which tells us that they think he's going to be closer to week one than it would be, say, week seven, because he'd be out automatically 6 weeks if he stayed on the PUP list. So that's a sign there that, and after the first game, okay, there's 10 games till that next game, which would be on the week two Sunday in September. So maybe it's that kind of a deal, but I just feel like, what's that difference between those 10 days? Is it that big? Maybe, I don't know. Doug Peterson said he feels like he wants to get Carson Wentz at least 1 week of a full practice before he can play. And he said, ideally more. Now, it's at the point where the Eagles are saying that Wentz will be reevaluated after this week's Patriots game. And if he does start participating in 11-11 again, that'll be a little bit over 2 weeks. It'll be about like 2.5 weeks here of practice he has for week one. So I think that kind of gives him enough time to be ready. So again, I am remaining consistent in my take that he will be ready for week one.
Yeah, and I just, unless barring a setback, that makes sense to me as well. I mean, it just doesn't seem like there's anything really to gain by having him miss week one. If he's healthy, then he's going to have to get in there at some point. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to be afraid to put your quarterback back in there, and you don't want to make him think that you're afraid to put him back in there. So, yeah, I think I like what you have to say about that situation, because we all want Carson Wentz. And if it's Nick Foles in week one, then you got Nick Foles,
right?
You know, and you could do a whole lot worse as a backup quarterback. Do we want to get in real quick to the Jalen Ramsey stuff about Carson Wentz? For those of you who didn't hear it, the Jaguars stud cornerback did an interview with GQ and had a lot of really nice things to say about Carson Wentz. He was asked about a lot of the quarterbacks in the league, and talked first about Deshaun Watson, the Texans young quarterback, said that he'll be a league MVP in a couple of years, 100%. No debate about that. Him and Carson Wentz, for every year starting now until 5 to 10 years, it's going to be them too. They're that good. I guess the reputation for Carson Wentz is out around the NFL, even though he wasn't a part of that. He was obviously, I think, I think that he was the league MVP before he got hurt. And obviously everybody's talking about Nick Foles because of what he did in the playoffs, but Carson Wentz is still obviously seen as the man around the NFL.
Very much so. I mean, you look at the NFL top 100 list that they release every year, which is silly. It's a silly list, but still, I mean, it's made by NFL players, and they voted Carson Wentz as the number 3 player in the league. And I think that says
a
lot. And by the way, I will say that even though he played in 3.25 fewer games than Tom Brady did last year, he still finished with more touchdowns, and I think at least one more touchdown and at least one fewer interception. So just something that his team didn't lose the Super Bowl either. So just another thing to consider. But I mean, the Jalen Ramsey thing is great because that guy is like just trashing everyone. He's saying Manning isn't good. He just, oh my gosh, he just like just so brutal on Josh Allen. Just, I think Josh Allen is trash. I don't care what nobody say. He is trash. And it's going to show too. That is a stupid draft pick to me. We play them this year, and I am excited as hell about it.
That was something else, man. Yeah,
that
he
is
unloaded.
Amazing. He unloaded on Joe Flacco, said he sucks. He was very patronizing about Dak Prescott. He's like, I liked how he talked himself down from Dak Prescott.
I was going to say, the compliment dropped precipitously.
All right.
Yeah.
It's okay. I love that. That's
awesome.
Exactly how to describe it. Ben Roethlisberger, decent at best. Matt Ryan, overrated. Jared Goff, average to above average, which doesn't seem so bad. But still, I mean, for all of those guys to get those kind of things said about them, and then for Jalen Ramsey to be like, oh man, Carson Wentz, he's just going to be an annual MVP candidate. I love that. I mean, look, Jalen Ramsey isn't, I like how he's just now the authority on everyone. But I mean, it's his opinion, but that's not irrelevant. There's something to that. It is, they see Carson Wentz and his personality and who he is, not only as a player and a talent, which, you know, obviously he checks all those boxes, but how he is as a person too, and his work ethic and the respect and everything. I think one of the interesting things that Jalen Ramsey had said in this was he hadn't heard good things about Ryan Tannehill. Like, he didn't really know a lot about Ryan Tannehill's caliber, because I guess he didn't watch him, but he hadn't heard good things. I'm sure, you know, guys talk around this league. Things get around. And I think for Carson Wentz to be mentioned as an MVP, in his mind, it's not just about his talent, but it also says a lot about his personality as well.
Well, let's move off of Carson Wentz. Obviously, we hope we see him on in the opener, and we hope he gets a back into 11-on-11s in practice. But one of the other big stars of this team, the offense, that we got a little bit of a report on this week from Ian Rappaport, is Alshon Jeffery. Reported that he's still covering from his rotator cuff surgery. No setback or anything like that, but mentioned the possibility that he could open the season on the PUP list. And if that happens, he can't play until week three, right?
Week seven. It would be the first six games. Yeah, so six games. And it's
that seems unlikely to me, BLG.
I mean, it seems very much like he would be closer to week one than week seven. And the funny thing about some of these Ian Rappaport tweets this offseason, and look, it's not personal, Ian, but man, you're kind of like reporting things in a way where it's like, you kind of almost report all possibilities. Like, he did this with the Vinnie Curry thing. He was like, well, Vinnie Curry is either going to be traded, or he's going to be cut, or the Eagles might keep him. Well, I like, yeah, Ian, like, those are all three of the possibilities that are going to, like, yes, you're going to be right on one of those. So, but the Alshon thing is weird, because the talk all along has been that, like, week one is the goal. It was never that it was going to linger into the season, especially 6 weeks in. I mean, I think it just doesn't seem likely to me that they're going to put him on the regular season PUP list, because look, even if he misses, let's say, the first two games, I mean, you don't put him on the PUP list. Like, you put him on the 53-man roster. Right. It sucks that you have to have his roster spot tied up for a couple weeks there because he can't play, but you don't keep him out for five or, you know, three more weeks or whatever, you know, or four more weeks just because, you know, like, you want that roster spot. So I don't really. And Doug Peterson after practice on Tuesday really kind of threw cold water on that. And he was like, I don't know where that came from. So I think, I don't know if Alshon will be ready for week one. I think it's very possible he misses the Falcons game, but I don't think it's going to be, you know, I think he's not going to start the season on that PUP list.
And we'll talk about how Alshon missing a game or two could affect the opening roster, the 53-man roster when the season breaks, because obviously losing Alshon means you lose your number one wide receiver. Some folks are going to get bumped up, so we'll talk about that more in just a minute. Any other updates from training camp you wanted to mention along? Any players that you saw you thought really helped themselves the most in camp this summer?
Absolutely, John. That's one of the most things that have been killing me about not being able to do a podcast. It's like, there's so much to talk about every single day. So it's hard to fit that all into one thing. But some of the best players from training camp this year have been not like necessarily the surprise guys, some guys who you already probably thought or knew might have been good. And Jalen Mills has been one of the best players in camp this year at cornerback. Ronald Darby has also been really good, and we'll talk about him a little bit later. Fletcher Cox, again, you already know he is good, but he has been a monster, and he was a monster against the Steelers. And that guy earlier this offseason said that the next thing for him was being defensive player of the year. And he kind of laughed that off, because as good as Fletcher Cox is, he doesn't get kind of, you know, those defensive player of the year numbers. His impact usually goes beyond the stat sheet. But man, like, the way he is practicing and the way he is playing, I am not thinking that is like impossible. I don't think it's likely, but I don't think it's impossible anymore. So you're looking at those guys. You're looking at a Nelson Agholor, who I think is going to be even better than he was last year. And I think that's significant. I think last year was about making a jump from being, you know, a really, really bad player, one of the worst wide receivers in the league, to good, to competent, a very good slot receiver. But I think he can go from a very good slot receiver to maybe a kind of Pro Bowl caliber slot player. And I'm not saying that means I think he's going to make the Pro Bowl, but I think he's going to be that kind of, he could take that kind of next step forward. So that's exciting as well. You have some young guys in here, like a Matt Pryor, who kind of came out of nowhere, the Eagles' sixth round pick, kind of really stepping up at guard. There was a time where Doug Peterson kicked Chance Warmack out of a first team drill because he had just gotten flagged for a false start, and he put Matt Pryor in there. And Pryor has been getting a lot of reps at right guard, the second team. They like his ability to play tackle as well. I think he makes Chance Warmack or Isaac Simalo I would personally hope would be Chance Wormack for many reasons.
Yeah.
Expendable. Yeah. So there's a lot of guys here I think that have stood out. I think, you know, you also look at guys who've had bad camps, such as a Donnell Pumphrey, and is in danger of losing this team. And it wasn't even that he was terrible before the injury. I don't think he was great, but I thought he was building some positive momentum. But as they say, you cannot make the club in the tub, and he's been hurt. So that hurts him. I think you look at a Mac Hollins, who has been getting these first team reps with Alshon Jeffrey not practicing. And I wouldn't say Mac has looked bad by any means, but I don't think he's done a lot to stand out. You know, you would have hoped to see more. So in that sense, it's just been disappointing. And then two of the biggest things, I'll end in this, you know, the weak side linebacker competition. First of all, it's almost like who cares, because that guy's going to play about a quarter of the snaps, like the
right.
Eagles
they do a lot of three safety Eagles.
Yeah, and they're not going to use their base defense the whole game. They're going nickel. They're going big nickel. But I really like what I've seen out of Kamu Grugier-Hill. At the same time, the Eagles clearly just do not care what I think, and have been putting Nate Gary as their starter there. But one of the most interesting battles, and one that continues to rage on here, is the nickel corner battle. Because, look, I think Sidney Jones is the most likely candidate for that job. But all of a sudden here, Avante Maddox is getting first team reps at nickel corner for the last 3 days. And I'm assuming that means he's going to start against the Patriots. So although training camp is over here, in terms of the practices we get to watch, there's still some battles to shake out in these preseason games.
Yeah, and let's just stick with cornerback for just a second, because you wrote a post for BleedingGreenNation.com today where sources were telling you that the Eagles were very much open to training Ronald Darby this offseason. And I know that there's still something that we hear talked a lot about, the possibility that because they have so many corners in camp here, that there's a possibility that Darby could be moved, and that could make a lot of these decisions, like, you know, who's your nickel corner, could make it a little bit easier for Jim Schwartz.
Absolutely, and to be clear here, and just so before people go crazy with anything, I'm not saying the Eagles are likely to trade Ronald Darby. All I'm saying is that I heard they have weighed it, and I'm sure they weigh trading a lot of their players. But I think it is significant, because it is not a situation where they think, okay, Ronald Darby is staying here no matter what. And
right.
Now maybe that has changed just because he's looked so good in camp and they feel really good about it. But to me, I think if they get a second-round pick, I think they're thinking real hard about that. And I think it's going to be hard for them to get that kind of pick, of course, because who is giving up a second-round pick for a player on the last year of their deal? I mean, you're going to have to pay this guy. You risk losing him in free agency if you do trade for him. But you can't underestimate that there are some desperate teams out there. I mean, we saw the Vikings give up a first and a fourth for Sam Bradford, and the Eagles are obviously not going to get that for Ronald Darby, but you never know. There was a report.
Well, an injury happens, and
yes.
You know, that's what happened with Teddy Bridgewater.
Exactly.
When the Eagles got that pick. You know, never know a big, you know, hey, listen, Jalen Ramsey, for example, goes out and tears his ACL. Who's to say the Jaguars don't come calling with an offer?
And there's talk that the Dolphins are I think Omar Kelly from the South Florida Sun Sentinel had said that the Miami is looking for a corner, and Miami's a team that traded for Byron Maxwell. So
that's right.
So we'll see. I guess we'll see how that shakes out. But it's interesting, though. It's definitely an interesting situation, just because you're looking at the Eagles suddenly working Avante Maddox in that first team defense, like I was just saying. And if he's your slot corner, and if Darby and Mills aren't getting traded, where does that leave Sidney Jones? It doesn't leave him on the playing field. So we'll have to see how that one shakes out still.
Right, I know the Eagles were talking a lot about the fact not having a first-round pick this year. They looked at Sidney Jones coming as a first-round pick, basically, after picking him, you know, in the second round last year, and knowing that they basically wouldn't have him for all of last season, using him as their de facto first-round pick for this year. And they obviously, I would imagine, want to get him on the field when they can. But we can also talk about the guy that they did pick first in this draft real quick. Before we move on to the game against New England here on Thursday night, let's talk about Dallas Goedert real quick, who everybody's raving about. This guy, you see him on the playing field, you saw him again on the field against the Steelers in the first preseason game, and man, he just, as good as Zach Ertz is, Dallas Goedert looks like a real special talent, BLG, and it seems as though, how much are they going to use him this year? How much are they going to do? A lot of two tight ends, a lot of, you know, a lot of packages where, you know, you can move Dallas into the slot and have Ertz a tight end. How are they going to get creative using both these guys?
It's going to be hard to keep Dallas Goedert off the field because, man, that guy is good.
He's really good.
He's really good. I've watched him now in every offseason practice that the Eagles have had. And, man, like, you can just tell this guy is ready to make an impact. And now, look, typically it takes rookie tight ends time to adjust in the NFL. I would say even more so than some other positions. But, I mean, he was out there looking great in the preseason game action. So it's not just like he's this guy who tears up practice and can't do anything in the games. I mean, we'll have to see how the regular season goes. And I just think because Ertz is ahead of him and because, you know, they still have, it's not like their wide receivers are no name guys here. I mean, you're not going to take Mike Wallace off the field forever. I mean, he obviously has a role in this offense, as does Nelson Agholor, as does Alshon Jeffrey when he'll be on the field. So I don't know exactly if we're going to see a ton of playing time from him, but that's fine. I don't think Dallas Goedert needs to be this guy who comes in and he's not going to be this guy you're throwing to on every play. He's not going to be this target monster, this volume guy, I should say. I don't think that's the player he is. I think, especially early on, I think he's going to be a really efficient target. I think that guy is going to be unstoppable in the red zone. I've seen him in practice. Like, no one can cover him in the red zone. He's too big and he's too fast and he knows how to use leverage and he knows how to get open. We saw that against the Steelers where Nate Sudfeld rolls out. Dallas Goedert finds a soft spot in the zone there and he gets open, easy touchdown. I mean, that is going to be his bread and butter this season. I think it's time, John. It is time to get excited about Dallas Goedert. That guy, he might not post these huge stats this year, but I think he's going to be very important on third down and very important in the red zone. I think he could get quite a decent amount of touchdowns for a rookie tight end here. So that is a guy who's definitely worth getting excited about.
Over under 550 receiving yards this year.
I'm going to go under just because, again, I think there's so many targets to share between here, and I don't think he has that big volume role, but I don't think that means he's going to have, you know, a disappointing season at all. I think he could even be at, like, I think I put my projection for him around like 280 or something. Like, that doesn't seem like a ton, but I still think he's going to be a really effective weapon for this team.
Oh, let's talk about the game here on Thursday night against the Patriots. And obviously, you know, we didn't see the first game was the Nate Sudfeld show against the Steelers. And we're going to get a little bit of Nick Foles in this game. He's going to get the start. Will he play any more than just a series or two?
Yeah, I don't think he'll play too much. I think about two or three series, depending how they go. Obviously, if they have like two, three and outs, I'm sure they'll put him back in for a third, see if they can get something going there. One of the more interesting things I want to see with Nick Foles is if Tom Brady actually shakes his hand.
I was thinking that same thing, BLG. I was totally wondering. I was saying to myself earlier today, I'll bet you this is the first time Tom Brady will have talked to Nick Foles if they see each other on the field before the game.
Yeah, we gotta see it at some point. All the cameras are going to be looking for it. Nick Foles was asked about it after practice on Tuesday. And of course, he did a great job of kind of downplaying that, saying like, look, I know you guys are making a big story of this in the media. It doesn't really matter to me. I talked to Tom Brady when he was here back when the Eagles and Patriots had joint training camp practices in 2013. He's a good guy. I like him. So, you know, Nick Foles is always going to say the right things. But come on, we got to see the handshake. You got to make up for it, Tom.
Tom, be a man. Be a man about the whole thing. Come on now. And, you know, I think that for as far as Nate Sudfeld goes, that this is a pretty big game for him. And really, all these preseason games are pretty big. I mean, if we're seeing a lot of Nate Sudfeld during the regular season, some very bad things have gone down. Important are these games for 2019 for him? Because Nick Foles this is his last year. This is the last year of his deal. It's hard to see a scenario in which Foles is back as the backup. The Eagles need to kind of make a decision on Sudfeld. And really, I guess these preseason games and, you know, what he does in practice somewhat during the course of the season will determine that, but it's mostly going to be these games, isn't it?
Nate Sudfeld has been okay to this point. I think he's shown some good things. I think he's has shown some struggles as well. I think that's his issue right now. He's kind of inconsistent. You're looking for, and of course, you know, he's obviously not going to step up and be this, you know, I don't think he's ever really realistically going to be this, you know, full-time, really good starting player. I just don't think that's what he is. I think I think he could potentially be a low-end starter in the league, or at least a pretty good backup. I think that's what the Eagles are obviously hoping for, that he can kind of be Carson Wentz's long-term backup here. That would be great. Now, Nate Sudfeld is a restricted free agent after this season, so that means they can pretty much easily keep him. I don't think it'll be too hard, but there will be a decision to be made, especially for an Eagles team that is tight against the cap. Nick Foles will be gone because he has that contract where it's like the mutual option where the Eagles, if they pick it up, Nick Foles can pay the Eagles $2 million, and then that's like his buyout. He gets to become an unrestricted free agent. I'm thinking they kind of did that contract right, so they could potentially trade him. If there's an offer out there, we'll see how that goes. But either way, he's going to be gone. Sudfeld will probably be retained. And then a name, John, that is new to the team this week. It is Christian Hackenberg.
Nice.
A guy who,
a much celebrated signing. What was the thinking here, man?
Oh my gosh.
I didn't get it.
I don't really get it either, John. especially after watching his first practice where his first two throws were interceptions. So, I mean, I think that signing is almost Doug Peterson's, has the potential to be Doug Peterson's magnum opus. Like, I think he's just like, look, I am so good, I can even make Christian Hackenberg into something. So you look at the quarterback situation for next year. You have Carson Wentz. He's eligible for that big mega contract he's eventually going to get. He's your starter. You probably are able to retain Nate Sudfeld as a backup. And then Christian Hackenberg will be here to compete with Sudfeld and potentially be that number three guy. And look, you know, Hackenberg is only 23. He has some good tools, you could say,
He's toolsy,
but he is also terrible. He is horrible. I've watched a good amount of Penn State games that he played. I thankfully did not watch too many Jets games, and it wouldn't have mattered because he has never played an NFL down regular season, although I have seen some of his performances against the Eagles in the preseason, and they've been horrible. So not really expecting much out of there, but I always think to myself, maybe, just maybe, if there is a coaching staff that could turn it around, maybe it is this one. And maybe turning around doesn't mean making him into a good player, but maybe into a not total disaster player, which would be a big step up.
Yeah, put Doug Peterson in Canton if he can even turn Christian Hackenberg into a serviceable backup.
Yes,
you know, that
agreed.
Just give him get the bust ready to go. Don't even wait the length of time you need to induct somebody. Get it done. So obviously we saw a lot of stuff that went down in the Pittsburgh game. A lot of the guys that perform well, some guys getting a lot of playing time. What did we see in that game that can affect what we might see against New England on Thursday night?
That's a good question. I think, you know, we got to see, going back to Sudfeld there, I think we're looking for more consistency. You saw the flashes. You saw that great throw to Shelton Gibson. You saw
nice movement in the pocket, BLG.
Yeah, I loved it. I loved seeing him on the Dallas Goedert touchdown. He almost looked like Carson out there a little bit, you know, rolling out, avoiding a free rusher. But you also saw the inconsistency, like I said. You saw him throw a pick on what was it, his first throw of the game, where a Steelers cornerback is just sitting down on that route and he just jumps it there. And the other interception he threw, Doug Peterson had kind of mentioned that was more in Bryce Treggs for the route that he had ran, and everything kind of slipped up a little there. But still, I mean, we want to see a little bit more out of him. We want to see a little bit more good decision making. And one thing that he's struggled with too is kind of getting the ball out on time. Like, he's a little late on some of these throws. Like, he's waiting for things to develop as opposed to throwing with anticipation here. So we kind of want to see him get that ball out quick and make some good decisions. As far as the rest of what we saw in that first game and how it could affect this week, I mean, I'm interested to see how this first team defense is going to look again, because, man, they looked awesome against the Steelers. Yeah. What, it was like two straight three and outs, and then
Fletcher Cox was a monster, like you mentioned earlier.
He was a beast. And he was beasting all pro guard. I'm blanking on his name right now from the Steelers, but like, that's how good he was immediately just coming in. David DeCastro, that's it. Like, immediately just comes in and beasts that guy in the preseason. Look, like, Fletcher Cox doesn't even need to be going at full speed at this time of year. And he's chasing down screenplays. It's like, this is great in the sense of, like, he looks awesome, but also, like, Fletcher Cox, what are you doing, man? Like,
yeah,
take it easy.
Hurt,
don't
man.
Get hurt.
Save some bullets for week 9.
Yes.
Seriously. Well, I mean, I think there's also going to be obviously some position battles to watch here. Some of these guys are going to be getting some playing time trying to make the last spots on the roster. If we're looking at wide receiver, obviously if Alshon Jeffrey misses a week or two, that's going to probably open up a spot. And I would imagine it makes more sense for this team maybe to put six wide receivers on the opening 53 man, just to, you know, so if you're not going to put Jeffrey on the PUP list, I would imagine, BLG, do you want to have five wide receivers going into that game?
Yeah. I think you definitely do. I think it's real interesting with that. I mean, it's when I say interesting, I mean, it's as interesting as a sixth wide receiver spot battle could be. But it is interesting in the sense of I don't know who that guy is right now because I don't think anyone stepped up. And I think that's a little disappointing. I think it's and it's funny, too, because I think it's not just like the Eagles don't have guys that can be that guy. I think they do. I just don't think anyone has really seized that. And I think Marcus Wheaton really missing some time here hurts him because I think he could have been that guy and he was looking like he might be able to be that guy. But now it seems like he might miss the second preseason game into addition to missing the first one. You're also looking at Bryce Treggs, who I think has kind of come on lately, but do they really count on him on special teams? And speaking of special teams, and a guy that I see you have mentioned here, John, is Kamar Aiken, who has not looked good in terms of catching the ball, but he has that size. He has NFL experience. He has the Joe Douglas bias going for him that he's a former Raven, which can't hurt. Look, I mean, that sixth guy probably isn't going to get much playing time anyway. So if he is going to be on special teams most of the time, it might not matter a ton that he hasn't looked great as a receiver, and they might just keep him on in that role. This kind of I know those spots kind of get not as they're not fun for fans because you're looking at a guy who might be a little more flashier on offense, but you're not really getting to see how that guy plays on special teams, and they kind of keep the unsexy pick and a veteran like Kamar Aiken.
Yeah, and that's where a lot of those guys live. They live on special teams, and that's important. You know, we see how often special teams can swing a game. Getting guys downfield, and Dave Phipps' units are usually one of the best in football. Giving him the horses, that guy's going to get more time in special teams than he probably will be as the fifth wide receiver anyway. I mean, Mac Hollins last year was the fourth wide receiver, and we barely ever saw him on the field. So, I mean, let's also look at running back, too. I think last year when we were talking about Corey Clement, we were talking about a guy who he was a guy who I think everybody thought, yeah, kind of serviceable. You know, he might not be, he's probably a nice thing to have around, dependable, get you from point A to point B, but not going to do anything that you know, really stirs your drink. But we watched him in the playoffs. We watched him late in the season really turn himself into a force. And I don't think that was a fluke. I think what we saw from Corey Clement was a guy just grab the role and run with it. And now, so he's established himself along with Jay Ajayi and Darren Sproles as the top three running backs on this team. But who's going to be the fourth running back right now? It seems like it's coming down to Josh Adams and Wendell Smallwood, BLG. Could it really be Wendell Smallwood?
It could be, John, because Josh Adams is hurt now. I don't think it's serious. He apparently had told Jeff McClain that he's going to be okay and back at practice soon. But again, you're still missing this preseason action. I mean, that's a big time for running backs, especially more than any other position, to really prove yourself. I mean, because you can only do so much in practice here when you're not really tackling to the ground anymore at this point. It's disappointing to see Josh Adams potentially missing this game. I would have liked to see what he can do with more playing time because, to me, he was kind of in the lead there for that fourth spot. Mm. But now it could be a Wendell Smallwood not because he's actually really good at anything in particular, but because, in theory, he can play on special teams, and Dave Phipp had praised him for that, so that's certainly something to note. And he can catch the ball a little bit and be a receiving back. He can pass block a little bit. He's not a great runner, but he can do that a little bit. Like, there's nothing that's overly making you feel great about Wendell Smallwood, but he could almost be the fourth running back by default just because Josh Adams could be missing time. Maybe the Eagles try to put him as a phantom injured reserve guy with this injury, kind of stash him away there. You know, Donald Pumphrey has not been practicing. I think he's almost out of the race entirely at this point because who knows when he's even going to be back. We don't know. We haven't really heard any kind of potential time frame. And then Matt Jones is around, but he hasn't really done anything. Like, he missed some time, too. He didn't play, obviously, against the Steelers. And maybe he has a big game against the Patriots, John, and all of a sudden we're here next week talking about how it's going to be Matt Jones. So Again,
Matt Jones is the guy who really interested me, BLG. I mean, he ran for over nearly 500 yards back in 2016 with the Redskins. Yeah. He had like 4.5 yards a carry. I mean, he seemed like a guy who probably out of all the guys we just mentioned has the most talent.
Right.
But again, you're talking about a fourth running back, and that's probably a guy you want for special teams as well, like you just mentioned.
Yeah, that's going to be a big factor in all of that. I'm curious to see who it'll be. It's funny, again, because it's just like the sixth receiver thing. It's like it doesn't matter. Like
it really doesn't.
The first three guys, too, I think are going to be so big for this team. I think it's another three-headed monster. You have Jay Ajayi as that lead back, and he looks great against the Steelers. Again, like I was just saying, Fletcher Cox, take it easy, man. Jay Ajayi is running through traffic and breaking tackles, and he literally lost his shoe on that play, and he's still going down the field. It's like, that is awesome to see. Also, please don't, Doug Peterson, don't put him back in the game. Like, I've seen all I need to see out of Jay Ajayi at this point. And again, Corey, the Eagles are so high on him. And I cannot stress how much that guy has developed from where he was last year at this point, because, you know, we think about where Corey Clement ended the season, being this guy who had 100 receiving yards in the Super Bowl. I mean, that he was not that player early on the season. Like, he was not ready to do that then. He developed through the season, and I think he's developed even more now. So that's exciting. And then Darren Sproles, John. Darren Sproles.
Totally forget about Darren Sproles, man.
At 35 years old, coming off not only an ACL injury, but a broken arm too, he looks fine. In a good way. I mean, he looks completely... the injury never happened. He looks spry as ever. He looks shifty. He's juking people out of their shoes in practice. It's great to see. It is exciting to me to think about this offense was one of the best in the league last year. And now they're adding Darren Sproles, another offensive weapon. Now you're giving Doug Peterson that guy to add into the mix as well. That's going to be great.
Tell you, guy, I'm really interested in seeing tonight is Derek Barnett, the number one draft pick from last year. I mean, I think we're kind of expecting him to take a step forward this year, and I know Brandon Graham doesn't look like there's a good chance he won't be ready for week one, and this is kind of a year that you would want Derek Barnett to take a little bit more of a prominent role on the defensive line, because, you know, you got Chris Long who's nearing the end here, and, you know, you've got
Brandon Graham, who might not even play in week one, depending how
Brandon Graham. I'm thinking the guy who's in trouble, the name just flew
Michael
right
Bennett
out of my
head. Michael Bennett too.
Bennett, thank you. Yeah these guys are not going to be around for a whole lot longer, and I think what you want to see is Derek Barnett establish himself as kind of Brandon Graham's number two.
I agree, John, and it's kind of been a quiet offseason for Derek Barnett, and not in the sense that, like, you know, I see him getting dominated out here. I just, and again, it's hard too to always judge defensive linemen in practice drills where they can't sack the quarterback, so you're not always gonna to see the results bear out there. But I do want to see more from him for sure, and I think it's important, especially as we said, with Brandon Graham potentially missing some time at the beginning of the season. We'll see. We don't know for sure. And even if Brandon Graham is playing, we know that Jim Schwartz loves to rotate his defensive ends. Derek Barnett is going to get a lot of playing time. Will he make the most of that playing time? I'm optimistic. I think Derek Barnett has underrated potential just because of his age. And I know Benjamin Solak, who clearly just hates Derek Barnett, as you may have read in a post he did earlier this offseason. But I think the age thing is important, man. Like, he was only 21 last year. That's not irrelevant to me. He still doesn't have that grown man strength, or at least he didn't at that point. And I think that's something he's going to continue to add. And I think he has been working on his pass rush repertoire this offseason in terms of working on the different moves. Because we all know he can bend. We all know he can get around the edge. Mm-hmm. But can he be there with the bull rush? Can he be good with his hands? And I think I've seen that at times. I've seen him beat Halapulavaiti in those one-on-one drills, but I've also seen Big V kind of get the best of him at times. So it is a interesting year for Derek Barnett. Are we going to see that big leap? I don't know if we will, just because I think some people kind of think, like, can he be this double-digit sack guy? And I don't think that's the right way to think, because the Eagles rotate their defensive ends so much, I don't think he's going to have that kind of opportunity. But we can see an increase in his pressure rate and the production that we do see when he is out there.
You haven't podcasted for about 2 months, but pulling Hala Pulavati just like that.
No
after
problem.
Not podcasting for 2 months. I know practicing. You do this for a living, BLG, but that's still pretty damn impressive.
Thanks.
One of the areas that concerns me, and I'll be interested to see against the Patriots, is defensive tackle. I mean, we're obviously not going to see Tim Jernigan for a while. We might not see him all year.
Yeah.
Haloti Ngata is getting up there as well. And this, to me, seems like, outside of Fletcher Cox, who, you know, sometimes plays like two defensive tackles at once, it just seems like this is an area on the defensive line where, you know, there's reason to be just a little bit concerned about the depth of defensive tackle right now. So what are you looking for to see in this Patriots game, the second preseason game from them?
I think it's a really big concern, John. I think, you know, it's easy to be very optimistic about this team in many ways. And as I was writing a post on BleedingGreenNation.com today, called 11 Things I Think About the Eagles at the End of Training Camp, I was like, man, I feel like I'm kind of being a homer here. Like, I'm so optimistic about everything. I mean, how could I not be? But defensive tackle.
They won the Super Bowl,
I know, they
BLG.
Won the Super Bowl.
I mean, you have to, yeah.
But defensive tackle is one of those things where, when you really think about it, I mean, if Fletcher Cox goes down, God forbid, who are your starting defensive tackles all of a sudden? Destiny, yeah. Vio, and Haloti Ngata?
That's shaky, man.
How good are you really feeling about that? Especially in not...
Well, you're going NASCAR, I think, a lot,
right,
if something like that happens. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna take one of those defensive ends, and you're going to move one
you
of those guys
to.
Inside if you have,
you have
to.
But, like... Man, I mean, this is a team that likes to rotate their defensive linemen. So it's not even just about those two guys starting. You have to figure, okay, now who else are we even getting in there? And you have to think about how this defensive line is so vital to this team's success. Like, they led the league in pressures last year. They won the Super Bowl ultimately and got there because of Brandon Graham making that strip sack. They won the game, and they won games with their defensive line. So to not have that, I don't feel great about it. And I don't think you can even count on Timmy Jernigan playing for sure this season, as you said. And that's really unfortunate. I hope to be wrong about that. We will see. But just the fact that you don't even know if he's going to play. And if you have Fletcher Cox, that'll be great. And that'll certainly be something to cherish. But it's just, man, it is certainly a position right now where I don't feel good about. I almost wonder if they will do something to address that. We saw early on in training camp, Jason Lockenfora had said that he'd be shocked if the Eagles don't make two more trades before week one, and we haven't seen any yet. I would almost wonder if they would look to kind of address that somehow. I don't know if there's guys really out there that make sense for them, but I think it's kind of a position to keep an eye on.
It's kind of funny, you don't see this much in football, but a straight up like cornerback for linebacker or up cornerback for defensive tackle trade, you know, something like, it's not going to happen. You trade for players and picks,
mm-hmm.
and usually not just player for player straight up, but obviously I think you're right. I think if somebody shakes loose somewhere, I agree with you. I think that's an area the Eagles would absolutely look to upgrade as a defensive tackle. Anything else you're looking at here against the Patriots in the second game? Anything that anything to watch for? Maybe along the linebacker front or any other spot? How about this Australian punter they got?
Well, at linebacker, starting there, I do want to see how the weak side competition, if you want to call it that, continues to go. We'll see if Nate Gary continues to get those first team reps. I think, you know, Kamu Grugier-Hill, who was my pick to win the Will job, he's my guy. I am a member of the Kamu Club. I think he makes plays, man. Like, you saw it in the Steelers game. He was around the ball. I think he finished with the most tackles of anyone on the team with 6. He's flying around out there. So I want to see if he can kind of do that against his former team, the Patriots. And one thing I want to mention about this Will linebacker battle, now that we're talking about it, is I almost think it's shadowed the bigger picture at linebacker, which is Jordan Hicks is back, and that is amazing. Like,
yeah,
that is a great thing for this
team. I
forgot
all about him, BLG. He's just, you, because he was hurt for so much of last year, it just completely flew out of everyone's mind that he was gone and that he's back.
And it's a huge deal. Like, when healthy, and I know he struggles staying healthy, but in 2016, he played all 16 games, so it's not impossible that we could see him
right. Stay
healthy and play well. I mean, he is a playmaker. He makes plays on the ball. He's adept in coverage. He can make plays against the run. I am excited to have Jordan Hicks back. I think that is a big boost. Now, we're all talking about, you know, how does this Eagles defense kind of recover from being that team in the Super Bowl that gave up over 600 yards, or it felt like a billion yards, for whatever it was. I don't even remember. But I think getting
it was a
Hicks
billion.
Back,
it was about
it was
a billion.
Yeah, it was a billion. Yeah, it didn't matter. It could be infinity yards. It just they won, so I don't care.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
But getting Jordan Hicks back, I think, is a big boost. And getting to the punter thing real quick, since you had mentioned it, and because people are dying to hear about it. I mean, it will be interesting again, right? I mean, this guy kicked an 81 yarder last week, Cameron Johnston. I mean, he's been inconsistent at times too, so there have been some issues there. But I almost think that, you know, after kind of having not the best offseason, that they're going to give him a chance. I think he's going to make the team, and I don't think he's going to have a long leash at all. I think he's screwing up, they're going to certainly find a way to bring another guy in. But early on, I think he's going to be the guy, and we'll see how that goes. Look, if he's hitting 81 yarders, I'm sure they won't mind that.
I'll tell you what would be beautiful is a 41-33 win by the Eagles against the Patriots again in the second preseason game. That's my prediction, BLG.
That's my score prediction I gave to our friends over at Pat's Pulpit, SB Nation's Patriots site. I wasn't even trying to do it at first, and I was like, I have to definitely do this.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, listen, man, this is going to be the first of many pregame shows that we do, these setup shows for the week ahead, and obviously we'll be doing them during the week, during the preseason here when the games are on a weeknight, but normally you'll be able to hear us doing BGN Radio on Saturday mornings leading up to the Sunday game. And you know, Brandon, man, it's so great to hear you back on the podcasting airwaves, and it's awesome to be doing this with you again, man. It's going to be a real fun season, and we've never done one where the Eagles are the defending Super Bowl champs.
Absolutely, John. Thank you for joining the BGN Radio team, the Bleeding Green Nation team. It is awesome to have you. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to hearing the feedback from everyone. Look, this is new. We need to hear from you. You need to subscribe to this podcast. You need to rate and review us. Give us some feedback. Tell us, what do you like? What don't you like? Because, again, we're figuring all this out. It's all new for us. You have to give us your feedback. And I want to thank you all for being here with us and sticking with Bleeding Green Nation. I really appreciate that. It means a lot to me. Those are not just empty words. This is a very big deal to me. So I thank you all. I thank you, John, for a great first episode. I feel like we got off to a good start here. There was so much to cover. It is so hard to just not do a podcast for 2 months and then try to fit all that into a certain amount of time. So I think we're off to a good start. I'm excited about this. I'm excited to hear the recap show from Kisten Solak on Friday, reacting to the Eagles' hopeful win over the Patriots in the preseason game here. So it should be good, John. I'm excited, and thanks again, bud.
I am too. And make sure to be checking out bleedinggreennation.com. That's where you'll find the Bleeding Green Nation podcast. Also, check out the rest of the SB Nation, Philadelphia sports teams podcasts, Broad Street Hockey, Liberty Ballers, and The Good Fight, which is the Phillies podcast that I'll be hosting a couple of shows on as well. 12 shows total that you'll be getting as part of this SB Nation Phillies, Eagles, Sixers, Flyers launch here as we're getting going. And you can get the shows on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcast, anywhere that you've always gotten this podcast, you can continue to get it there as well. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We will talk to you all next time. Again, listen for Kisten Solak on Friday right here on BGN Radio.
Hey, everybody, how you doing? Well, that's good. My name is Bill Matz. I am the director of Fun and Games for Broad Street Hockey Radio Podcasts.
And I am Kelly, the deputy managing editor of BroadStreetHockey.com.
I'm Steph Driver, the NHL editorial manager for SB Nation.
And I am Charlie O'Connor, lead Flyers writer for TheAthletic.com.
And together we make up BSH Radio, one of the shows that you get at the SB Nation podcast family. We have a lot coming to you this year, and we want you to listen to our show. It is just an all Flyers, all the time show, so much content. I really hope you listen to it. It is a great piece of the SB Nation podcast family, along with all your other favorite sports.
We all love hockey, specifically the Flyers.
Let's go the Flyers.
The hockey team, the Flyers.